Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Showed me your computer so I could speak with the Doldrum. It was simple to understand from there how you determine time with it. Your Federation won't exist for millions of years. And by then, my civilization will be gone.
Sorry. Our regulations, they forbid me from telling you. But that doesn't mean that we can't find a way out of this for both of us.
Captain, I understand you are trying to save your people. As I am doing for mine. But we live now, not in the future. Your ship's given us exactly what we need to win our war. I'm sorry.
Hello, and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek. I'm looking at you, Dan. I know you're ready, right? Jesse's definitely ready. Jesse's making weird fists. Dan?
I don't know what's going on right now.
I just want to make sure you're ready because it's the whole thing we do where I say the welcome part and then you... All right.
Dan. You're always like pointing it out. You're always pointing out the process.
Well, we don't want to, you know...
You can enjoy the
process...
We
don't want to blow it.
...without drawing attention to the process.
Sometimes part of the art is the... Never mind.
Always with this guy.
Hello. And welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You know what it's called.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Dan. It's interesting
what
you say that.
What is it called, Dan?
Because this week on...
Chief O'Brien!
On the newest episode of It's Got Star Trek.
Chief O'Brien!
We're going to start talking about season four...
Damn.
...of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We're back to new episodes.
Yep.
Yeah.
New episodes, folks.
That's hot stuff.
Wow.
It is. And yeah, I forget if I said it, but this is episode 349 of It's Got Star
That's
Trek.
That's two less than 351.
All right. Do you want to? It's a risk.
You want
if
a
I,
cookie?
No, it's a risk if I
you
ask
want
you
a cookie?
If there was some logic behind the picking 351 instead of 352. No. Okay, I knew it was a risk.
What are you talking about?
He could have done a three farty joke or something.
Yeah, like a
but
three.
But he didn't.
Yeah. It is not.
He might be saving that for next week's episode. Okay. So, yes.
Saving farts for next week?
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Are you talking about saving farts for next week?
And we're beginning our weekly coverage of Strange New Worlds' fourth season with our discussion of the season premiere that was titled Valis Marineris.
I wouldn't mind a little time on planet once in a while. This is a chaotic place.
This place is giving me the creeps.
You also spoke to me of where you are from, but you failed to explain when.
This is an unusual mission.
Okay.
Now, not where you're from, when you're from.
Oh,
they did it. They did that thing.
They did it.
Every time travel episode always has a line where someone's like, where you're from, when they're from.
Yeah.
It's not where they're from, it's when they're from. I should ask you where you're from, or should I say when you're from?
Right.
You know, when we did this.
Right.
I mean,
it's not how we did it, but when did we?
Jesse, can you confirm for me and for the audience, can you back me up when I tell the audience that they're missing out right now?
Mm.
Dan's doing this.
Sorry.
This charming little, he's got his fists on his hips and he's like making a coy little face and he's bouncing his shoulders around in a very
when will they do
casually
it?
Sexy way, a little flirty way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I it was so distracting that I forget the
someday.
The
point. We'll, someday we'll have a video. Yeah, you can feast
that
your
is
eyes.
Correct.
Feast your eyes.
You don't like that when they do the when you're from. Is that a bugaboo?
Not really a bugaboo. It's just like it's so predictable. It's so predictable. It's a predictaboo.
All right.
It's so predictaboo.
So, real quick, because we do want to get into our discussion of Valis Marineris.
But you knew that already.
ASAP. Marineris. We want to do that.
Does it have shrimp in it?
What? Oh, Valis Marineris? Yeah. Is it because of the marinara sauce vibe?
Perhaps.
You associate shrimp with marinara sauce? I associate like Auntie Anne's pretzels or spaghetti.
Sausage. Yeah.
You may have other options.
All right. Sausage with marinara sauce? Anyway. Sorry. Sorry, folks.
That is correct.
So,
you're supposed to put, sausage and marinara sauce.
I mean,
one time one of our friends ordered like a pasta with sausage and a cream sauce. Uh-huh. And like before he ordered, he was like, I know what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. And they did say it, which was they questioned his decision to have a sausage pasta with
it's bold.
Cream sauce on it. And he was like, I know it. They always say that, but that's how I like it.
You can make it work. Yeah. It's not impossible.
So, before we get into our discussion, we do
copy that number one.
We have some communiques from the audience that we need to go over.
These are our messages.
Yeah, but are you telling me there's an audience?
But well, there's listeners. I don't know if there's an audience per se.
Somebody's listening.
There's people who are
somebody heard it
obtaining the digital data that comprises our podcast episodes, and they're doing something with it.
What do you think they're doing with it?
Let's not worry about it.
But I did want to give a brief overview, because when we do new seasons, new episodes of Star Trek, it's not unusual for some new listeners to come join us either now or in the future, maybe. Maybe they decide they're going to start here.
It can surprise you.
So just to give you a brief overview of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, it's myself, Patrick, and then you've got Dan over there. That's Dan. Say Dan.
Hi.
Hi, that's Dan.
My name is Dan.
No, that's Jesse saying that. So, like, then Jesse. Jesse's.
I can say that.
Okay, that's
my
Jesse.
My name is Jesse.
Okay,
this is
very
Jesse.
Confusing for the new listeners, but
they'll get it.
Okay, not ideal.
We've been doing this about like six, 7 years or something like that. And, we back in the day when we were like, we want to do something a little different. There's so many great Star Trek podcasts. It's such a huge and diverse, edict and all that, a really great ecosystem of podcasts. So we thought we should do something a little different. So we got, the three middle-aged white guys.
Crazy.
With no particular expertise in anything of the relevant to,
dangerous.
Making money.
This stuff. Oh yeah, definitely don't have any expertise in making money. we talk about Star Trek and have a good time, and we are a fun, happy Star Trek. We will criticize, but we're not, it's a fun time. We're trying to have fun. And one note.
We're keeping it fun, guys.
One note, because this comes up from time to time. If you believe at any point we have contradicted ourselves, any of us individually here.
Because
thought I got that right.
If you think we've contradicted ourselves on a previous point,
we may have.
We may have for a couple of reasons. One may be just people grow and change. You have different life experiences, different contexts, etc. Your opinions may change one way or the other over time. Also, we just don't remember a lot.
We're old.
Of anything. I don't remember what we talked about last week.
Are you concerned or are you worried, Mr. Scott?
I mean, in this case, I'm concerned.
I forget all kinds of stuff.
Because, I don't know. Like, it's probably a problem. It's a good thing they're recorded, though. It's helpful for us. Mm-hmm. So that's the long and the short of it. Fun. We're like a fun, goofy podcast.
That's the short.
We have like really, we're going to give you some really insightful comments.
How is that possible?
It's going to be well thought out, well outlined.
It is not.
You're going to be, frankly, fucking bored. This podcast is essentially like listening to people reading or putting together a spreadsheet, just sort of silently clicking.
Roger that.
I can click with a pen if you want.
Okay, that's a callback to.
Are my sounds
this is a callback to several episodes?
Are my sounds too loud?
No, I don't think so.
Sound pretty good.
Why don't you play a sound of your choice, Dan? I mean,
indeed.
I guess that's what you are hoping to do. All right.
Roger that.
So
you told me to play a sound, and then you didn't listen.
Well, no, I thought you played a sound.
Are you listening?
Then you played a second sound. You can't blame me for talking over the second
sound. Are you listening?
I thought you'd played the first.
Well, you were talking over the first sound, too. You talked over both. So. Yes, you did. I played it again because you talked. You said, play a sound, Dan. Blah, 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 blah. So you talked over both sounds.
Dan, you're giving any new listeners the impression that we are not indeed well-organized, cogent, or any of that business. So,
yes.
That much is clear.
So yes, that's the basic thing of the show. The structure you'll figure out. We'll talk. We'll do some emails. We'll talk about the show.
With these things, you were frank.
And we will. We are welcoming the return. Did I say that properly? But anyway,
there's a bug in here.
There was a.
I thought I got that right.
Do you mean a bug in the studio?
Yes, in the studio there might be a mosquito.
Okay. Well, you. Keep on that. That's like your task, Jesse, is to pay attention to the mosquito situation.
By the way, kill the laddie.
We are happy to bring back, it was a brief hiatus for our extremely popular, internationally popular game, Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before?
Indeed.
We took a little break while we were on vacation. Now we're back and we're going to get into it. And new listeners, if you don't know how that game works, do not worry. We will provide a little orientation towards the end of the episode.
It's pretty easy.
When we play the game. It's an audience engagement game.
Okay.
You'll figure it out. So, and finally, I did want to apologize to new users.
Oh, no.
You know what's hilarious? Is because I was apologizing for that maybe happening, which is...
What are you doing?
I sometimes have a quirk of calling listeners users, which is a holdover from when I ran a bulletin board system in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. This is not an excuse, though, because Dan also ran a successful bulletin board in the early 90s, and I don't recall him ever
over 30
calling listeners users.
No, I don't think I have done that.
I don't mean it in a pejorative sense, you know.
It's like just, as in losers?
Well, I definitely didn't mean it like that, for sure. But
I don't think this will be useful.
I didn't want to imply that any of our listeners are users of illicit drugs. I mean, many of them are, of course, presumably. But it's...
That's horrible.
It's not like a definite thing, right? Okay.
Come on, baby. You've got this.
I think that's enough of that. So why don't we get to our emails and voicemails and such?
All right.
Okay.
These are our messages.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan.
Egg salad.
I had a note here that said, give Dan time to play the Tuvok clip.
Hey, you're good.
All right. So
I'm not joking, Lee.
First, we'll start
was
with...
Is that too loud?
No, I just think that's...
Jesse went like,
Well, that's the TOS...
That's
the tinnitus.
That one's supposed to be kind of loud. Yeah. And like,
I'm not joking, Lee.
It's trebly. Trebly.
Trebly. There you go.
Trouble with trebles.
Damn it. You got there just a hair before me, Dan.
A hair bit.
All right. Our first email is from Emmanuel.
Hi.
Subject line, East Kakalaki is for lovers.
Mm.
And that is a callback to Jesse referring to North Carolina as North Kakalaki.
Patrick dropped something on
the
floor.
Don't worry about that. You know,
this is a very weird noise.
I don't know what the podcast equivalent of cinema verite is. Is it like podcast verite? Where we're just dropping shit. And Jesse's worried about some fucking imaginary mosquito.
That assessment is mine to make.
Is there a bug in here?
All right. So Emmanuel goes on to say, good day, the Patriot, 2000, Jesse James meets Frankenstein's daughter, 1966, and Dances with Wolves, 1990.
Good man.
It was difficult to read that because it the way it's formatted in the email is much clearer, but I enjoyed that.
It's like some sort of avant-garde.
Nice work.
Yeah. Emmanuel says, I just wanted to say how much I loved and appreciated Dan's singing the full Magnum P.I. theme at the end of episode 347. What Dan's doing now might be a clue that it wasn't Dan doing that.
Yeah.
It was me!
Yeah.
I'm the one who did that. Dan, who is... No joke, Dan is really one of the most talented musicians
that's how it goes
you'll ever meet. And I'm never quite clear when he does this if he's goofing around or if he just doesn't quite remember it. Jesse, because he is really good at music.
Jesse, isn't that how it goes?
I think that's what I remember.
Look, you got some pieces of it.
No, that's how it goes. How would you sing it in one voice?
I never paid attention to the show, but I do remember the theme, and I think that's
it goes like this. It goes like. Stop laughing! I can't do it if you over talk over me. Let me sing it. It goes like this. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
You're getting like two notes right.
Like what are you talking about?
And all the middle stuff is
there's like a speedboat and shit.
No, that's how it goes. Well, how did you sing it then?
I sang it at the end of last.
Yeah, so
week's
do
episode.
It again, please, so we can compare and contrast.
I decline.
Please, why not? Why not?
I want to encourage people to go listen to last week's episode.
Oh,
or just
on.
Listen to the Magnum P.I. thing.
But we touched on it in
a
previous episode that I was present.
This is the perfect time, as you're accusing me of doing it wrong, and I'm asking you to prove me wrong by telling me how it goes, and you're refusing, so you're wimping out.
I'm not wimping out.
Yes,
you are.
I'm refusing. You're winking out.
Yo. I'm refusing to perform. But I would gladly, at a break, I'll play the music to you, and then
I just think it's absurd that this is one of those perfect opportunities to prove to the audience how right you are, and it's just like an opportunity to like compare and contrast. This is an excellent audience opportunity, and you're just like, no, I don't feel like it because you feel some kind of embarrassment.
Yeah, could be. I mean, that's a good analysis. I personally disagree, but I cannot see outside myself, so you might be right.
So you're just going to sit and like laugh at me like excessively, like some might say like forcibly, and you're just going to accuse me of being wrong, but then you're not going to play your part and like offer the solution.
I don't look great in your description of this scenario, but you have described the scenario accurately.
Some bullshit, man.
There's serious
bullshit.
There's much more. And Dan, you got to get ready. You got
to
get ready here.
I don't have to do shit. You don't have to do shit. I don't have to do shit.
Okay, but you're going to disappoint some people. And
okay.
You'll understand what I mean in a second. So Emmanuel goes on to say, maybe it's just a crazy idea.
Ah, yes.
...
Large.
All right, he said, thank you, Dan. I don't think he's going to retract that, thank you.
Crazy.
But Dan's singing is evidence.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
Thanks again, Dan. Another one will be retracted.
Sabotage.
That the next episode of It's Not Star Trek, which we do It's Not Star Trek, could be some form of theme song review show. And to get around a DMCA takedown notice, Dan could sing them a cappella, which is Italian for firm pasta.
So, evidence!
It was me, but yeah, Dan could do it. Maybe we could take it in turns. I like that idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of Mr. Belvedere right now.
Just a crazy idea.
There you go. I knew Dan was like...
just a crazy idea.
Dan's good to the listeners. He then goes on to conclude his email by saying, I don't know. It might be the permanent marker fumes talking, but I... Permanent
I know
marker.
What that's all about.
Permanent. Do we call it a permanent marker? This is, I think that might be an Australian term. What do we call them? Permanent?
This is irrelevant.
Fair point.
A permanent, like a Sharpie?
Yeah.
I guess it's a permanent marker. I call it a permanent marker.
Yeah. Permanent? All right. Maybe it might be the permanent marker fumes talking, but I think it could send you boys to the big leagues if we did such a show. With your cumtowns and your how did this get maids.
Cumtowns?
Yeah, it's a podcast. It's a very famous podcast.
Cumtown?
Yeah, Cumtown is a very famous podcast. How did this get maids? Why? Pretty soon.
How did I get here?
Is Cumtown what I think it's about?
Cumtown, it's a funny podcast.
But it's about semen.
Is it like Fuck City?
I mean, sort of, I guess.
Is it spelled like that?
It's spelled Cumtown, exactly.
Like C-U-M.
Yeah, like C-U-M.
Like cum.
Yeah.
Now that's the spirit.
So he goes on to say, why, pretty soon you boys could be selling predatory online psychiatry like BetterHelp, or selling GoDaddy, whose CEO killed an elephant. Then one of you could split off and make your own podcast about how the vaccine, quote unquote, the vaccine is made by lizard people.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Also, my question for you guys this week is, have you guys ever seen each other naked? And if not, why not? From your number two Aussie listener, Mr. Emmanuel, 1944.
I think that, like,
I don't remember having done so.
I think people have seen me naked. I don't think anyone's ever seen you two naked.
Well,
I mean, yeah, Dan, people have seen Jesse and I naked, but perhaps not you.
Not you or him.
You know what I mean when I say that.
I think you may have had parts of your body exposed, but that doesn't count as being naked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with Jesse. Like, flapping your penis out occasionally is not. That's not nudity, but it is penis.
It's exposure. Yeah. But
I'm just saying that you two are a little bit more prudish about your nudity.
Well, sure, but I think Dan has probably poked his head in a few windows here and there, and you know, you know.
You're calling me a peeping Tom? What the fuck?
I'm not calling you a Marty McFly. I'm saying just like, you know,
what are you talking about?
Inadvertently, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Actually, it wasn't Marty McFly. It was the dad.
Oh, yeah.
It was George.
Yeah, George McFly. Thank you for the correction. Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. So, yeah, no, I don't, not much nudity that I'm aware of, you know. We grew up in the 90s where we were terrified of, you know.
I just said that, like, I am not that, I was never that prudish about the
dance. You're a special case. Most of us kept it covered up.
Yeah. Dan's got the right attitude.
I don't run around.
I aim to go.
It's not like I used to run around naked all the time. It just didn't bother me that much. I mean, I'm less prone to do it now because I'm getting to that age where it becomes like kind of creepy, but like,
you're getting to that.
It's not as cute anymore.
All right, thanks, Emmanuel, as always.
As
any, are you done? Did you already do a thanks, Agamus? I know you did it somewhere.
Thanks, Agamus.
There we go. All right, now we have an email from Rob. Rob,
well, is he gonna bring up the Beatles?
No,
did anyone bring up the Beatles?
No, I'm kind of curious. Where's that? Hold that thought. Okay. Let's get through Rob's thing. Because I wanted to...
Rob Globitz.
This is Dan's brother. I wanted to note that last week, you know... okay. There was a discussion when we were discussing Lazarus in the alternative factor.
That wasn't last week.
No, it wasn't. I'm saying this is a multi-week discussion. So we were watching the alternative factor, and at one point McCoy is talking about Lazarus and saying he has the constitution of a dinosaur and the recuperative powers to boot or whatever, something along those lines.
Yeah, ditto,
right. Thanks.
Recuperative powers, ditto.
And although it seemed like the episode... meant like he was super strong and healed well, like it wasn't 100% clear at that point, you know. It was a little weird and we weren't sure what it meant, and
McCoy was a bit off in that episode.
It was a weird episode for McCoy. Rob wrote in and using Dino Rock as a academic
dinosaurs are strong and scary big animals that are not very hairy.
He argued that McCoy meant that dinosaurs had strong constitutions and strong recuperative powers, and then last week, he wrote in, you know, and made a comment. I had to truncate that email because there was a bit of a spoiler for this week's Strange New Worlds episode.
Before you go on, like, watching the episode, like, it's pretty obvious from that email that there were going to be dinosaurs in this episode. So I don't know what spoiler he could have possibly been giving. Other than, like, if the spoiler he was giving was that there were dinosaurs, like, that's not, wasn't hidden from the email very well, because he brought up Dino Rock, and he referenced the next episode, so it's like, well, there's going to be dinosaurs in the next episode. Was there something else?
Yeah, well, I actually disagree with you a little bit. The Dino Rock was way before anybody knew what was going on in Strange New Worlds. No, it wasn't out, nobody had seen it yet, right?
No, but he said, but he brought up Dino Rock, and then he said, the next episode.
I'm going to read the email, and then you make your decision here. The email he sent last week said, follow up to my previous email, I hadn't watched the first episode of SNW season 4, nor did I know the plot of it when I sent the first email, right? Right? And he said, however, I have just watched it and I was delighted to find that it strengthens my argument.
Yeah, so that's the Dino Rock. That dinosaurs are have a strong constitution.
I would argue that if you hadn't seen the episode and had no clue what was happening in the episode, you would not assume that he was referencing Dino Rock.
Well, like when he said it strengthens my assertion or opinion, like what else could he be referencing other than the fact that dinosaurs are have a strong constitution? What else could he be referencing?
You can check with him. I just want to finish the
email. I'm asking your opinion. Like, because you're saying
I don't have one. I'm just trying to finish the
because
email.
Because you said there's no spoiler, and I'm saying, okay, like, what
you disagree
else
with me,
about?
And that's cool. You disagree with me.
I just want to know. I don't think
it's a spoiler.
I just want to know. I'm asking, like, seriously, what else you think it could be? This is a serious question.
Last week, when I read that email, when I read his email, the truncated version of the email, because I haven't read the rest of it, did you immediately say, oh, the first episode clearly has dinosaurs?
Well, when I turned the episode on, I was like, this is probably going to, I didn't think about it much then, but when I got home, I was like, oh, this is probably going to have dinosaurs.
All right. Well, there you go. The part I truncated was the dinosaurs in SNW season 4, episode 1 are indeed strong and scary. Mm-hmm. And as Dino Rock recommends, I urge you not to forget the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Lon certainly did not. And so this week, Rob writes in, subject line, I'm sorry, Patrick. Hello, Patrick, and Patrick, and not Dan or Jesse. I'm sorry for spoiling SNW season 4, episode 1 for you. I feel bad now. Rob, P.S., Bruce Willis was dead the whole time in The Sixth Sense. Also, Tyler Durden is both Edward Norton and Brad Pitt.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
And I've written to Rob, but I'll reemphasize it here. To me, it didn't spoil it simply because from seeing previews and stuff like that, I saw glimpses of some like dinosaurs.
Okay. I just want to be clear about something here. Mm-hmm. When I was asking what else it could reference, all I was doing was you were telling me that it was not a spoiler, and so I was taking my opportunity to respond by simply asking, like, well, if he wasn't referencing dinosaurs, what else could he possibly be referencing? All right. Then so that was my question to you.
Got it. And I don't have an adequate answer for you.
And also I wanted to say that, like, that's not really a spoiler anyways, because the dinosaurs were like really like the least spoilery part of the episode.
So it's not an issue. Now
Patrick's being really weird right now.
No, we gotta talk about this fucking episode.
Well, I'm trying to fucking talk too. Would you keep shutting me up?
We have a voicemail from Jack Dorino, and then hopefully in the second break we'll talk about this episode. Jack Dorino.
So I'll just keep my mouth shut and won't talk this whole episode. How's that?
All right, we'll give that a try. Voicemail from Jack Dorino.
Fucking piece of shit.
And he says, here we go.
Hi.
I'm going to play this voicemail now.
Good day. This is a message for Huey, Dewey, and Peter Cottontail.
Hi.
And mostly for Peter Cottontail. My question is, on the most recent episode of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, was the phrase, don't make me make that an order. Mm-hmm. Does that phrase rather count as a, that's an order? Because it sort of sounds like a that's an order to me. Just curious on your thoughts, Peter. Oh, this is your friend, Jack Dorino. Have a great day. Bye now.
Jack Dorino.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
From Let's Talk About Treks podcast. Fantastic podcast. So Dan, I was interested in whether that counted, and again, a reminder, Dan likes to kind of highlight when shows use that kind of cliche, like, that's an order. You know, sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's a little, you know, really cliched and ridiculous. So what do you think, Dan? Does that count as a that's an order? Or maybe it counts because Pike kind of is always like a little weirdly passive.
Well, he said, you heard my order, hold fire, stand down, photon torpedo. I did, like, I'll be honest, it didn't even register with me at the time, which means it's not bad, because that's an order always registers in my mind. It always stands out. It always, like, hits a trigger in my brain. And just I'm thinking about it now after the fact, but just the fact that it didn't trigger anything, no, it doesn't count. I'm thinking about it now, and no, it's, you heard my order. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it is a rewording of the same idea. And concept and message and assertion and command and whatever, but it's okay, because they I think it's just because all you have to do in these situations is just change the
just
order,
not use the cliche,
just change the order of the words a little bit. And also, all it takes sometimes.
Part of your frustration is not necessary. Sometimes it's fine. It's more about when it's that. Don't save me, save yourselves, right. Or that's an order, right. I'm going to chop my legs, whatever.
I'm going to chop my legs off.
The captain's going down with a ship.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, so, but like I said, sometimes all it matters is just, like, take the extra 2 seconds to, like, rearrange your words a little bit. You know, stop relying on these cookie-cutter set of words, and
well said, man.
Quite sincerely, this is a very good tip to creatives out there, that it honestly doesn't take that much effort to go, even if the core of it is a cliche or you're using that literary tool, just play with it a little bit. Surprise us a little bit.
But I'm glad he brought that up, because that is a good point he made about whether this counted.
I'm also very glad. And I wanted to demonstrate the degree of professionalism, you know, relative to this here podcast, that Jack Dorino displays. Not only does he have that wonderful voice, of course, but I'm going to give you an example of his professionalism. It might be an ironic example, but I'm going to send you the first voicemail he sent me before sending me the one I played, where he was like, okay, I'm going to do this right this time. So here is the aborted voicemail from Jack Dorino.
Good day. This is a message for Huey, Dewey, and Peter Cottontail. Mostly for Peter Cottontail, to be fair. My question is, in the most recent episode of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, what is it he said? Don't make me make that an order. Does that count as a that's an order? This is your friend Jack Torino, in case I didn't mention it previously. Have a great day.
Excellent. I would have done exactly the same thing.
I just love the deflated thing. He's like, have a great day.
Does he know you're going to be playing this?
Oh, probably not. But he will appreciate that.
He's
in airing his error, I have highlighted the degree of professionality that he provides the podcasting community, both on his podcast and as a guest and a contributor to other podcasts. So go check out Let's Talk About Treks with Jack Torino and Earl Grey.
Copy that, number one.
All right. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about this episode, starting with horse business, horsing around.
Oh, yeah.
I did bring up the Beatles, that if you want me to explain why I brought up the Beatles.
All right. We're going to start. When we come back, we're going to start with that, because I'm intrigued by this. I'm very intrigued by this. Mm-hmm. All right. So we will be right back.
Hey, dinosaur! You there!
Well, this is a fun one.
Can we go now, please?
And we're back!
Oh.
I'm detecting life signs.
Where did they come from?
Hailing them, sir. Yeah, we're coming. Jeez. What you got, boss? We need to get a better idea of what we're facing.
I'll come on board to see them.
Thank you, Dan.
That was some things.
Those were things, man.
It was a nice little
A string of things.
I listened.
Cavalcade.
It was a cavalcade. But it was all connected. Panoply. It was connected by my mind. I listened to the Magnum PI theme, and I'm telling you, I was pretty darn close to what that sounds like.
Yeah. Great. That's good.
Based on what I could hear from his brown headphones, I concur.
Yeah. It was like, because there's a guitar part that goes, and then there's the hits, the orchestra hits that go,
So, those are some serious.
I just felt like I needed to defend myself because you were mocking me earlier, Patrick. And so I was just like, you were complimentary. You were like, normally Dan is very good with this stuff, but then you kind of laughed and mocked me. So I felt like I needed to defend myself.
All of these are true points. Fair points.
The Beatles. The reason I brought up the Beatles was because last week I said that I was singing Maxwell Silverhammer
from the White Album, or something?
And it's not from the White Album, it's from Abbey Road.
Oh.
I was sure that somebody would call me out on that, but I guess Beatles aren't really as all
it's
that
not
anymore.
On the White
I could have sworn it was, but it's
I could have sworn it was too.
Yeah, it's not though. Maybe you're thinking of Rocky Raccoon.
Yeah, that's on the White Album.
I think the Monkees are better than the Beatles.
Yeah, dude.
Like, kind of, honestly.
Abbey Road. It's on Abbey Road. I wouldn't go that far, but I would. But the Monkees are pretty awesome.
Yeah, Last Train to Clarksville and a TV show.
Right, they had a bunch. They played a bunch of Neil Diamond and
Neil Sedaka, Neil Armstrong,
Carol Kane.
Yes,
that is correct.
Indeed.
All right. So this episode, Malus Marineris.
It is good, but it lacks restraint.
You know, you've articulated kind of better than I have, because look, we're gonna go through all the particulars.
I was entertained.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that the ideas that it was like a neat puzzle they put together.
Sure.
I thought
it was a neat puzzle.
It was a neat puzzle that
I'm missing a few pieces.
Yeah, they were missing some things, but if you
and
just
they had some pieces from other puzzles, but if you just that kind of shoved in.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. That was one thing, is they kind of took things they didn't have to put into the puzzle and they put them in there. It's like, you know,
it's kind of heavy-handed conclusion to, you know, I mean, like this is where central to this whole thing.
I mean, the whole, like, and the asteroid belt is caused by this bold planet. It's like, you didn't have to put that in there.
I'm also not 100% clear on the message, but maybe we'll discover that as we discuss.
So, but I think it's just, like... Yeah. Like I said, I was entertained the whole way through. So in the end, like, how can I fault something that keeps me entertained?
So were somebody to say, are you not entertained? You would say, no, I am indeed entertained. However.
Right.
Yeah.
So So, and like you said, that maybe they didn't put all the puzzle pieces together right, but the when they presented it, if you just take it at face value, I felt like, oh, that's an interesting mm-hmm. take. That's a neat, interesting take. There's a lot of problems mm-hmm. with that, but sure, that was that they put together a lot of things in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But I think the line that sums it up best is at the end.
I'm really curious if you're thinking about the same thing I'm thinking that drove me nuts.
I don't know, but this is the line.
Well, if it were up to me, everyone would know that the Enterprise was responsible for humanity's origin.
Like that. Okay, that was obviously not what you were thinking.
No, but that was a good part of it.
But that really drives it home. The Enterprise is responsible for the origin of humanity. Yeah. Like, how much hubris do you have to have to create a story like this? Like, okay, imagine if Gene Roddenberry created this story.
Roddenberry.
You would think, like, what kind of asshole, like, has his own creation, like, sit, like, be the reason that humanity is created? It's like, you've got, I created the Enterprise, and it does all this awesome shit. Oh, by the way, it's also responsible for creating humanity.
This is the kind of thing that you keep secret, top secret, like, even more secret than the Discovery shit. Like, mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they kept
which
that.
Is convenient, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind that to a degree, but, you know. How many times you go to that well, right?
Yeah.
And
this one needs to stay a secret.
Okay. So what line were you thinking, Patrick?
There were two other lines that I thought could be candidates. And one was from Admiral April. I don't have the exact line, but he was basically, his position to Pike, who was concerned about what had happened, he told Pike, well, clearly whatever was meant to happen, happened.
Wait.
And I was like,
everything happened as it was meant to.
Oh, there we go. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
yeah, exactly.
We're not going to discuss that?
That doesn't answer anything.
And sort of related to that, it's not the other line. I'll get to that in a second. But the other, related to that, when Pike is talking to Mbenga, and Mbenga's trying to make him feel better, and Mbenga's like, hey, if you didn't do it, all these things would have been undone. And Pike is like, yeah, but Pike's whole issue is that he made that massive decision based on a hunch, when weirdly, thematically, everything in the episode, Pike's response shouldn't have been about his guessing on a hunch. Pike should have been when Mbenga was like, but there would be no humans, all these things, trillions of people's lives would be gone or changed. And Pike should have responded the interesting philosophical thing, even if they don't discuss it, the interesting philosophical tag to this episode is Pike saying, yeah, but what makes our timeline have
exactly
any more right to exist.
Right. That's
another one.
Yeah. So
and they don't talk about that at all.
Yeah. So right. And Mega says if their planet had remained in the system, entire histories would be erased, trillions of lives, mm-hmm. evolutions undone. And Pike goes, yeah, but I didn't know that in the moment. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that in the moment that I made the call. It was a hunch. It was a good one. Mm-hmm. Was it a good hunch? Like, what does that even mean? But I had no idea. So number one, he's saying that had he known that the Dol Durham would have killed zillions of people, it would have been enough to convince him to kill them. Like, it doesn't matter how many people they kill. That doesn't give him the right to kill them.
No, that was not his hunch.
No.
He was just talking about the fifth planet thing, right? That his hunch was like, oh shit, the fifth planet doesn't exist. He suddenly was realizing
But that's what Mbenga is saying. Mbenga is saying that like,
oh yeah, yeah.
He's saying that it's okay to kill the Dol Durham because the Dol Durham ended up killing zillions of people. But like,
I didn't get that from him. Maybe I missed that line.
Because Mbenga said if their planet had remained in the system, entire histories would have been erased, trillions of lives, evolution undone.
Yeah, but he wasn't referring specifically to the Mars thing. He was referring to literally everything afterwards because there would be no humans.
I think we're saying the same thing because that's kind of what I'm saying
what I'm trying
to say is that like. And Benga's saying that it was okay to kill the Dol Durham because by killing the Dol Durham, it maintained all these lives. And if the Dol Durham had like been allowed to live, mm-hmm. then all these lives would have been fucked up, and the Dol Durham would have taken over all this shit.
I do believe I'm taking a materially different interpretation. Because I didn't take him to be referring specifically to anything related to the Dol Durham and the Mars people or whatever. Just simply the fact that if Pike hadn't done that, the whole universe, everything, the Federation, all sorts of things unimaginably would be different. Right? He's not saying like it's okay to kill them because they were going to kill people. Take the killing out of it. He would have argued like if you killed one person if the story was framed a little differently and it was like murdering a baby in order to save everybody, he wasn't saying that the baby was going to kill people. He was saying that, like, because of the plot events, you got to kill the baby. Otherwise, you know, the existing time frame goes away.
Well, when Pike responds to M'Benga, this is why it's a confusing response then, because, like I said, M'Benga says entire histories would have been erased, trillions of lives, evolution's undone. And Pike says, yes, but I didn't know that in the moment that I made the call. It was a hunch, which makes it sound like he's responding to M'Benga saying, trillions of lives, evolution's undone. And then Pike says, I didn't know that trillions of lives would be lost. I didn't know that evolution's undone when I made that decision. It was a hunch. So it sounds like Pike is responding, saying that's why he did that. Because he's directly responding to M'Benga saying that evolution's undone. And Pike's like, I didn't know that, but I thought it was possible that it was a hunch. So it sounds like he's responding directly to M'Benga.
Again, I'm interpreting the hunch he's referring to is the sudden realization that
they shouldn't change humans, the past.
No, because the whole thing was, we think by interfering, we're going to change the past.
Right.
And he had the hunch. He didn't know 100%, but he had the sudden clarity that one of those predestination paradoxes. Oh shit, we got to let these people die.
No, and that's precisely how the scene presented itself. That's how that scene presented itself. It was exactly what you just said, where it was like by letting that happen, that preserved like the original timeline, one of those paradox things, right? I'm just saying that Pike's response to M'Benga, I don't think supported like that scene because Pike is responding directly to M'Benga saying evolution's undone. I don't know. It just seems to me that scene presents slightly different than what Pike is responding to M'Benga to me.
The other line, and I bet you $1 million Dan caught on to this.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Because Pike is actually saying is he didn't know in the moment that what he did was going to preserve the timeline. That's what he's saying, right? When he says, like, I didn't know that in the moment, it was a hunch. His hunch was that what he was doing would preserve the timeline, right?
Yeah, and I think the difference between hunch and know is he didn't have, like, the scientific, gathered evidence, but his brain was like, no, this is the only thing that it can mean. It was a good hunch.
His hunch was that it would preserve the timeline. And that's what the scene presented. That's what that line sounds like. But the way he's responding to M'Benga, it sounds like he's saying... Because M'Benga says trillions of lives would have been lost. Okay. And it sounds like he's saying, I didn't know that trillions of lives would be lost. Cool. It just sounds like he's responding to something different.
The other line that I was thinking of was that really I wrestled with because it kind of drove me nuts was when at the end, when he's talking, you know, he's making that difficult decision and he's talking to Una and he's like, in our time, there is no fifth planet. And I was like, wait a second. No.
Yeah.
I know they probably argued about this in the writer's room because the way he said it was filmically in the context of a TV show and that moment and needing tight, efficient dialogue, I get it. They must have decided after a long argument that was the easiest way to get the audience to understand that what Pike is referring to is that bug planet. However, the way he says it makes Pike sound... like stupid because there's eight planets.
Right.
There is a fifth planet. It's just not that fifth planet. Right. The sixth planet has become the fifth planet. I apologize for sounding like Daffy Duck. The sixth planet has become the fifth planet.
Well, and if they were so worried about like preserving the timeline, how come they were so willing to help the what was that race of people? That species
the,
of people?
The Martians.
Martians. Oh yeah, they're Martians.
Why
was he so like? He was like, there may be another way. We can communicate them so they won't eat your planet. She even said like they're gonna eat our planet up and leave it as a red wasteland.
Yeah.
And so like, isn't that like? Ring some bells being like, huh, Pike should be at that moment be like, maybe I shouldn't help her, like, save her from the Dol Durham, because maybe the Dol Durham is the reason Mars turned red.
Of course, now we know it's kind of, I did appreciate the kind of, look, I do get aggravated sometimes when sci-fi goes the old, like, and it turns out that this thing is explained by this other thing, right? It's not always bad, and even in this episode, it was just kind of like multiple things because it was like the asteroid, the Mars, and the dinosaurs all at once. but I did like the slight minor irony that that her trying to save her planet actually created the, like, all the problems that made Mars, you know, go shitty in the long term because the orbit shifted.
There were so many things that were like, that had the possibility of turning Mars into a red planet, apparently, because the Dol Durham sucking on their planet, that could make it a red planet, which is what
according to her.
But Pike should have been right then and there, backed himself away from the situation, but he didn't. But turns out that's a good thing because the other thing that can turn it into a red planet is it going out of whacking its orbit out of whack and making it all cold.
Which, by the way, I don't think you have to shift the orbit all that much. I think you shift it by, like, you know, 30 miles.
Is that just the natural state of any planet? When it dies, it just turns into a red Mars? It seems like there are other options.
No, it's look, first of all, there's a lot to quibble about with the quote-unquote science of this episode, but who cares, right? It's Star Trek. It's, it doesn't have to be, like, perfect or whatever.
Doesn't have to be perfect, but there's got to be a limit somewhere.
But it's a fair point that, yes, if the orbit would have shifted a little bit, it's further away, it gets less heat from the sun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that line really kind of jumped out at me. I mean, again, it sounds like we're complaining about a lot. I agree with what you said earlier on, Dan, that this was an enjoyable episode, and big parts of it were really fun and even sort of intellectually engaging and interesting. I just, the way it all kind of came together sort of just, maybe you just have to watch it like five times. I don't know. It just feels to me like there's something missing.
And I don't like how it was all hand waved away when they were talking about it, when him and April were talking and Pike was just like,
so don't overthink it.
Don't overthink it. It's like, what do you mean don't overthink it?
Right, exactly.
You should overthink the fuck out of that.
It's okay to feel bad.
Like, that's a lot to think about. Don't
Admiral April comes off kind of shitty in this situation. Like, I don't know that, I don't think they're intending that, but I don't know. Sometimes I enjoy the way these shows are produced, but every now and then the message seems like
they
very
could
weird.
Have. I feel like they could have done this episode without making the Enterprise the reason humanity exists.
Absolutely,
That was like restraint.
Yeah.
Restraint. Have you ever heard like a pop song and the person's just whining so hard in the song and you're just thinking like this song could have been better if they just used some restraint with their words.
Pull it back a little bit.
Pull it back. Use like don't try to be as poetic as you think you are. Stop like making your voice do that weird inflection thing when you sing so much. Like, use some restraint, you know? Like, it's like, I'm supposed to be like,
the way you're describing restraint, it sounds like this awesome product like you can buy on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like,
use restraint.
You can get it in 12 ounces, 24 ounces.
See, now the other thing is that we've talked about this before, where we want our universe creating / universe ending episodes. We're sort of used to having Discovery do that. Yeah. That's a Discovery thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not a knock on Discovery. That's just more Discovery thing. And one thing that I like about Strange New Worlds is it was more like, you know, the neighborhood,
Neighborhood Pike.
Neighborhood Pike.
Yeah.
And anyways, it's just like, not to say that there aren't dire situations that can happen, but it doesn't, like, it's less on a universal scale. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's more just like your standard sort of, you know.
You've actually made me more angry than I was initially, because the way you framed it as the arrogance of setting that, I kind of just took it as like, okay, it's another one of these goofy, you know, the sci-fi characters we love are at the center of everything. But you're right, there is an arrogance to be like, our thing is important. And oh, by the way, by doing that, we're kind of lending some credence to ancient aliens, to ancient Martians, like to stuff that is fun, but it's also, because like,
I don't mind ancient alien stuff.
Look, I'm not saying I mind it. I'm just saying that because it's like a real, like currently like a, not a, maybe issue is not the right term, but it's just kind of funny that when we already have a TAS, the animated series episode, that's a fun and interesting episode, but it is a problematic episode because it's intending to be progressive and nice, but it's making that mistake of saying that all like technologically advanced ancient brown cultures were actually like aliens. Mm-hmm. We're helping them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not cool. Now, this episode's not saying that, but it...
Oh, that's not exactly what I said.
But it is like, it's saying like insect people are bad. I mean, Ortegas is defending it, but like a lot of the other people are like, fuck the insect people. Martians existed and they're weird. And like, you know, shit was happening on Earth. Again, not a big deal, but kind of in the vein of what you were saying, it's like, you know, do you need like all those things?
Yeah, right.
Or could we maybe reel it in a little bit?
I mean, TNG had that I thought it was a fun but kind of silly when Barkley N squared or whatever it's called,
the nth degree
N squared, when Barkley got smart and they went, they found
Barkley got smart and y'all remember that time Barkley got smart,
he was always smart, you know what I mean, yeah. But they went, they found the center of the galaxy alien, like I mean, like that's kind of there's always some kind of silly alien doing being kind
of
silly,
of course,
but like you said, they didn't have to like grab at all those things, they could have toned it, taken it back a few steps, and it still would have been a good episode. They could have taken the whole creation of humanity out of it, and it could have maintained that more fun, more light, like smaller scope, lower level kind of story that Star Trek: Strange New Worlds is what I find appealing about that show.
They could have been, punching dinosaurs. And, they could have kept that.
That's an example of a pretty fun scene, I gotta say. I don't know what you guys thought about it. I enjoyed it.
So. Absolutely. Are you guys going to tell us about the dinosaurs?
I enjoyed
talk about dinosaurs.
I enjoyed the dinosaur stuff. I was a little disappointed, although I totally get it from a production standpoint, that it wasn't as dinosaur-y as you kind of thought it was. And I think it goes along the lines you're kind of talking about, Dan. You're kind of thinking, oh, this is going to be like, they're going to have all these challenges. Isn't it fun? Starfleet people trying to be cool and nice and not hurt the dinosaurs while trying to rescue themselves.
They just kind of zapped one and jumped out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was like, but what happened was cool, but I understand the special effects are expensive and all that.
Yeah. I think they tried to make up for that weird sweep at the end, which I think I could have also done without.
See, here's the thing. Here's where I really liked that. And I actually had to self-analyze for a bit. I had to do some meditation. I was like, I shouldn't be liking this, but I was like, why do I like this? And I'll tell you, I think there's two primary reasons I liked it. One was because I love when they do that gag where they do the fun final scene and you think it's going to end. And then the music, all of a sudden it goes down and then it swells back. I was like, oh, by the way, whoa, no, here's more. Right. And then it kept
going.
Yeah,
they did. That is a good trick.
And I'm going to see if I can articulate this well, because I've been having some trouble articulating this, which is...
So don't overthink it.
Good advice, Mike. When I genocide some people, I won't overthink it. Is that I took that last scene, and actually some of the other special effects in the show, I took it as a modern version of what TOS did a lot, which was actually go beyond the production capability of what they were doing, which is what, you know, led to the quote unquote cheesy special effects. But what it was is they were like, we care more about the emotion and the story. Mm-hmm. And we don't mind if we're going these dinosaurs look a little cartoony and stuff. Mm-hmm. And if they hadn't done all those scenes, like maybe they could have made the other dinosaurs like look really good, but they were like, no, it's okay that we can't quite make this look, it's not going to look like Jurassic Park, but it's still going to be cool. Like when a TOS does, some ships fighting with flashing light bulbs and stuff, or they got the crazy rocks and the purple sky. It looks cheap, but they inhabit it in a fun way. And I thought there was a little of that going. I kind of like that when they go beyond what they can actually accomplish with their creativity and bias themselves to erring on being too creative versus being too simple, because sometimes when you go for only what you can do, it constrains you in ways where you're like, okay, well, like it looks good, but it feels constrained.
When the T-Rex was like opening his mouth and roaring, and not at the final sweep, but in the episode, I kept thinking about how I thought there was a string of spit going from the roof of his mouth to the bottom of his mouth. And I was like, that's too visible. It's too visible. Like, and it's not nearly as bad as in Phantom Menace. Is that the first one, Star Wars? Mm-hmm. Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
When the head of the Gungans, he goes like, and the spittle flies out of his mouth. And it looks super lame and cartoony. It didn't look anything like that. But it kind of reminded me of just like, they really put like so much effort into that spit that they made it a little too too visible, too sharp. I don't know. It was cool to look at. It was enjoyable, I guess. It's just, for me, I mean the final thing I could have done with or without that final thing.
I get it. I totally get that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was, the other thing was a lot of the ship stuff was really, I thought, really well done, where the ship was kind of bouncing around in the storms and all that.
What about when the camera was like turning around?
I still don't like that.
Oh my God. I was not into that. That was the worst.
it was like, why?
That was Discovery. Doing it
to me, that was the worst offender of like all of them. Yeah. Because like it was slow and steady and it didn't stop.
I know. It just kept going.
We're turning.
And also like, and unlike a lot of the other incidents, when they use, especially on Discovery, when they use the spinny thing, I still wasn't a fan of it, but there was usually like all sorts of crazy stuff going on. And you could argue, even if I would argue against it, but you could argue that there was like a thematic reason to use that obnoxious visual language. And here it's like, really didn't, like, they only did it because they were like, oh, they're time traveling. And when you time travel, you're like, I don't know, spin around. Yeah, like, everyone just expects you spin around. I was like, I don't know. Like,
I think, I guess it was just implying that the squall was like flipping them around or something. And, you know, you have to, it's like when it's like, oh, they're getting a message from the past. It's like, well, of course it's them giving the message from the past. Yeah, yeah. And of course,
that's not
like
a new thing. In fact, they've done that. I think, I don't know about it on Strange New Worlds, but that exact plot point was used, I think, somewhat recently somewhere.
So
did we skip over the horse bit? We didn't talk about
that. Oh yeah. Well, let's let Dan provide his point, and then I think I've got a definite point. I'm curious if you share this view, Jesse.
So I was just trying to summate. So the reason the humans form. Humans form because it all came from the explosion. The planet exploded and it knocked Mars out of whack, right? Which made it cold and it died.
It didn't knock it. The science doesn't fully make sense here. They're saying because the fifth planet disappeared,
the gravimetric shifted and Mars went. That's
out.
What it was.
Went out.
Yeah, the gravimetric, and it got cold.
I don't know. If that's how that works.
And the humans formed because the blast hit the planet. Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to SETI Alpha 5.
That's what brought on the cold times era.
Yeah, asteroid that killed those dinosaurs.
So the lack of planet changed the gravity for Mars and it turned it dead. The shit hitting the planet hitting the Earth like is what caused humans to form.
They also said Earth shifted out a little bit too.
And then the asteroid belt is just the leftover remnants of that
4% of the planet. Another confusing thing. They're like, where did the rest of it go? Because Spock was all specifically, he's like, the asteroid, 4% of the planet turned into the asteroid belt. It's like, okay, where's the fucking 96% other?
And all that was convenient enough to also shoot them back into their own time. They rode the wave of the explosion back to the future.
You gotta ride the, it's not the crimson wave in this case.
Ride the snake.
It's the blue wave. What color is that? Sky blue. It was a blue. It was like a blue storm, wasn't it?
Unknown.
So, the horse scene. I'm waiting for Dan because he's got something that he wants to. He's scrolling through his list. He's getting a little nervous.
No, I'm not nervous. He just got me all like hoopty booped.
All right, well, okay.
This may well be my favorite part.
Okay, hoopty. All right. So
they're all cow people now.
You mean, oh, okay.
Was it like a Western sort of planet?
Yeah, I wanted to know more about what that mission was.
Here's the thing.
And I wanted to know those rocks, the floating rocks, was that because of bad gravity or was it because of...
Bad gravity.
Don't go
to that side of town, it's full of bad gravity.
Or was it because there was some kind of steam and gas shooting out from like underneath the floor, the ground there or something?
I'm right there with
Why
you,
were
Dan.
They floating there but nothing else was?
Well, because I'll tell you.
But this is not a criticism, I just really want to know.
For me, it's a criticism. I really like the cowboy bit, I got it.
Thank goodness.
But you talk about the end scene being unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. It really seemed to me when I was watching this, I was like, we'd seen some clips from this scene in the trailer for the whole season. And I was like, they just made this scene for the trailer for the season.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Right.
Because they wanted to convey to people, because Star Trek has done so many cowboy episodes, they were trying to imply that, hey, Strange New Worlds, they're going to do one of those Star Trek cowboy episodes. You want to see their twist? Nope. It's just this.
Which stunk.
Yeah. Look, I'm happy to be proven wrong or whatever, but... I never even thought about that,
but that you make a good point. It's probably just for the trailer.
I don't think this is the first time they've done it. It just sort of really stood out as, okay, they're framing this as like, oh, we're kind of reminding ourselves that Pike likes to ride horses, and Laan and Benger are just, I don't know, They're like cool with it, and they wanted to get Lon in a sexy outfit so she and so Spock could be all like, I'm gonna have sex with a cow person.
I don't think this will be useful.
But yeah, it's just this. It was unnecessary.
It was not needed.
Yeah, it didn't have anything to do with anything that came after this.
We'll probably see more of that. And
it would have been nice to at least have known what they were doing. But I guess we're just supposed to like just throw it away.
On the one hand, it's like cool, we can imagine. On the other hand, right there with you, Dan, it's like that whatever adventure that was. That sounded
we're never gonna
awesome.
Get it. Yeah, we're never gonna get it.
Never gonna get it. Never gonna get Scotty it. Scotty was never gonna get it.
Scotty was getting all like worked up thinking about Spock and Lon like.
Yeah, well,
cosplaying together in the room.
I do enjoy.
Are they setting up some kind of like romance between Scotty and Ortegas? I think they are. I think that's why they're beefing with each other
that's
so hard.
That's I didn't think about that.
You know, I hadn't thought of that, and I'm kind of annoyed if they do. Let's talk about
freaking engineers.
Are they pilots?
Do you think?
That's what I talk like.
That's totally what you talk like.
The cliches.
Letty that's hiding. Maybe we can see the Letty that's hiding. Just you stun.
Odd line reading.
Yeah.
Maybe we can see the Letty that's hiding behind it.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Letty that's
back and forth.
Lon and Unanar.
I'm now sad that you've brought up the unfortunately very plausible idea that they're going to set up some sort of ill-fated romance.
Because why were they making such a point of them like beefing hard with each other? And at the end, they bump into each other when they're drinks, and it's like, oh, you're stupid. Oh, you're stupid. No, it's why are they making it such a point that they
don't
like
each other? I'm also extremely worried. I don't think they're going to do this. I have enough faith in the producers that I don't think they're actually going to do this time around.
Producers?
I really don't like introducing fun new characters
Asha?
With the purpose of murdering them later so that you feel bad. Remember last season with the eyeball guy and like everything got all weird and this, you know, it was like we met this super nice dude.
Yeah, the eyeball guy.
And then you feel bad because he's like all set. Like, I know it's sometimes necessary, but for like a season long arc of this is going to make you sad. We're going to
talk
about
like the Vulcan girl.
Yeah,
is all that is required for us to communicate.
The introduction of the Vulcan girl kind of you get a little nervous because you're like, they've introduced a new character. Is the goal to be all like, oh, she's so annoying, but then it's going to turn out actually she's super cool and it's going to be nice, and then lo and behold, she dies in an away mission, and Uhura like learns something about that or something. Yeah, right. I really hope it's not that.
See,
I think most people, whether they realize it or not, are kind of over this whole, you know, inventing a character to quote unquote fridge them later just to artificially generate an emotional response.
That's good.
As opposed to working with the characters you've got, like Deep Space Nine would.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I was also with the Scotty putting all those unnecessary alarms, like that never really came into play in the episode. It happened like Ortegas was annoyed by it. So if anything, that is more reason to like that they're going to get together, because it's another way that Ortegas is annoyed by him, and thus this sort of love-hate flirtiness. Yeah. The only other time it came up in the episode is when like they were deep in the shit. And some alarms are going off, and Scotty's like, "Oh, those alarms are going off!" And Pike is like, "Fuck off, Scotty!" They played no real role in the episode, so I can only
presumably later. Maybe.
So well, maybe either later or just a reason for him to beef with Ortega some more. But like, why is Scotty worrying about having to do extra work on the ship later when they're trying not to die? He has all these, you know, having too many alarms is just as bad as having no alarms.
Absolutely.
But like, and if you're in the middle of the shit, it's like you're not gonna quibble over. It's like, yeah, you're gonna have to fix some shit later, Scotty. Deal with it so you don't fucking die.
I do wish I had a time to take a break alarm, because it is time to
take a
break.
I wish I had a time to poop in your mouth alarm.
Oh, you know you don't. That's a invitation, open invitation, 24/7.
Ew, gross.
It is. All right, we'll be right.
That's a red alert.
We'll be right back.
Perhaps you could stall.
Come on, Lon and Una and I are going to talk about dinosaurs. I've got to go.
Monster.
And we're back.
We have only the barest amount of impulse power for now.
She was really freaking out. Like, she's not usually on the bridge. Like, she like just couldn't handle it. Man.
I enjoyed that. I know it was silly, but that whole example with the flippers where he was trying to say, could we, you know, whatever. And she was implying that it would be like trying to escape from a boat with flippers, with really bad flippers that might
get lost or so. I can't even remember exactly what it was, but it was this weird little thing.
There was also another time when they were talking about the Category 10 interstellar squall, and they were gonna, and then she was like, the last, I saw those once before. I was in a phone box. Was that like a joke about her like having sex in a phone box?
No,
like because she like had sex and had an orgasm and saw a squall.
I think it was just crazy. A joke about her like living forever.
But like, why a phone box? That's what I'm saying. Is like she had sex in a phone box.
I don't think it was anything to do with sex.
Prepared to give an answer to this question.
But do you understand?
And it's in my notes because I have a question to you guys.
Okay,
about
but do you understand where I'm coming from with that assumption, with that idea?
I'm going to explain what the reference is to.
But do you guys understand what I'm saying? Where like she was like saying
no,
like
I don't, because I unfortunately that never occurred to me, but simply because I'm aware of what the reference
but
is.
But don't you understand what I'm saying? It's like such a crazy storm, and she had such an orgasm in the phone box in like a phone booth that she saw an interstellar squall in her vagina.
That's a great imagination.
Her vagina had an interstellar squall that she witnessed with her brain.
The way you're acting this out is convincing.
You see the connection.
Everybody's missing his gestures.
You see the connection.
Do not. Everybody's
you see
these
the
judges.
Connection.
No, and I do not, because when the joke happened, I immediately understood the reference to the joke, and I made a note to ask you guys if you were into or annoyed with this particular running gag.
He said he understood, then he said he didn't understand. I just wish he'd pick a fucking side.
All right, so it's a Doctor
Looks
Who joke.
Watch.
It's a Doctor Who joke. Yeah. They've done a few of these little hidden Doctor Who jokes. In the last season, you could see when that ship was like trapped, right, in something, there was a little Doctor Who phone box, right?
Oh, because he's in a British phone box.
And exactly, and the whole Doctor Who is a Time Lord, and she lives forever, and Doctor Who, so they kept making these jokes that Pella is familiar with Pelia is familiar with the Doctor, like the Doctor from Doctor Who.
I imagined her like phone box. Being in an American style now, like phone booth.
I was going to ask you
like a book and shit.
What your view was of this running gag, and I guess it wasn't apparent, but so now that you're familiar with like now they're making these Doctor Who jokes, for my money. I initially was sort of like, I mean, I don't, you know, I get it, because they put, you know, the Millennium Falcon in, you know, the battle with the Borg in First Contact, that type of stuff. Fun. Okay, I get it. Not necessarily anything wrong with this. But now it's like a line of dialogue, and it's like, really? Because people have talked about maybe they'll do a crossover with Doctor Who, and it's like, whatever. Okay. Here's how I think that this running gag, if they keep it up, can be done well. And I think this is how you do it to have fun with the joke about Doctor Who, yet also not piss people off, which is have this running gag about Doctor Who in various little drips and drabs, and then finish the joke with the punchline that they find the police box, you know, the police phone box, whatever they call it, and they open it, and out comes the Doctor, but not the Doctor from Doctor Who, the Doctor from Voyager.
The Doctor, yes.
Now, if they had the Doctor from Voyager hop out, that would be a hilarious joke. And then that's a funny gag because he's the Doctor and the Doctor from Doctor Who's the Doctor. So
that's a good way to do it.
I reject your premise. I think it
well,
was
you're
just
wrong
her, I think
because
it's
everyone
just,
online is very
just,
familiar
I think
with
it's just
the,
her
the
having an orgasm, and then she just is like making a joke about having an orgasm.
Right in to feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Subject line.
Patrick is being very confrontational tonight.
I'm not being confrontational.
Yes, you are. Every time I talk, you start looking at your watch. You're trying to rush me along, and like you're being very confrontational this evening.
I was looking at my watch not for the time, but for my heart rate, because I was just concerned, but turns out it's fine.
Oh, because you too low. Because you are confrontational. Your heart rate's going up because I'm somehow frustrating you tonight.
So now the audience needs to know, especially new listeners. Dan is delighted.
Commander, you are not our enemy.
Dan is happy to know that he's impacted me this way. We're old friends. This is good. It's a good thing. All right.
Feels like you're not helping.
Now, we will be concluding our discussion of this episode momentarily, but first...
I want to know why they promoted him to Commodore and not Admiral like they did with Captain Kirk.
No. Well, because Commodore... Okay, we'll talk about that briefly, and then we're going to do what we actually have to do, which is where the hell have I heard that before?
He's doing it again.
No, because there's a lot we need to do, and we have a limited amount of time. The Commodore thing
is Patrick's show, everyone.
No.
It's Patrick's show.
It's just you're asking questions that have answers, and I'm sorry if I'm nerdy enough to know that the answers were, which is... During TOS, they used Commodore. Commodore in
it's nothing to do with you being nerdy enough to know.
In the real world, the Commodore rank... got absorbed into the Admiral ranks. So now it's the lowest.
Geordi's a Commodore in that Voyager.
Exactly.
Episode.
Star Trek in the past used Commodore, then didn't use it for a while. And then in Picard, et cetera, then they brought the Commodore rank
back.
See, that's exactly what I wanted to know. That's why I asked the question. I wasn't asking it facetiously or anything.
I think it sounds cool.
I was asking the question, and then you were like, I'm sorry, I'm so nerdy to know the answer. It's like, there's no reason to be sorry. Like, I wanted to know the answer.
Okay.
What I was annoyed about was that you were like pushing me aside.
Okay. It's because
64.
We come back to the third break and we're trying to do Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before? And
no.
We need to take a few minutes just because
The question.
We took a hiatus.
I don't think I've heard that before.
On this game, and Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before? It's a very simple audience engagement game where we will play a clip that either we've selected or a listener has suggested to us, a clip 10 seconds or less, from somewhere in the Star Trek universe. And then the audience has a chance to write in by next week, by Thursday or Friday.
Most of us live in the now.
After you hear this, write in with your guests at feedback@ScottStarTrek.com or DM us on social media. So we'll play that clip in a second. However,
Connie, hurry up with that idiom.
I was wondering, I was like, look, especially for new listeners, we're starting the game back up. We need to provide an example of some of the previous clips, right?
Just I might be able to send a bolt of electricity, but I don't want to kill the laddie.
Just to give an idea, now, just to be clear, Dan's playing those clips.
That tall, scary Martian lady just came right through the bulkhead and took it. We couldn't stop her.
I am following my mentor, Dan, over here. My mentor, Dan, who has been teaching me all sorts of things with regard to editing and audio and rhythms and all this stuff. And
I thought you'd say that.
I realized if Dan were doing this, he would play all of the previous clips. All 26.
Yes. All 26.
Previous clips. So.
To have everyone guess all of them?
No, just to give an example. I want new listeners
to
have an example of the types of things they might hear and guess. And while you're listening.
You just might surprise yourself.
Yeah. Try to guess as you go along, right? So, you're ready, Dan? Are you going to hold off on your clips for a second? Okay. You're going to play a clip to indicate that you're ready? All right. Good. Now, I'm going to push play.
Understood, number one.
And this will be a nice little collection of every single previous Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before.
Copy that, number one.
Clip. All right, here we go.
I'm done.
Welcome. I've been expecting you.
These are in order, by the way.
If I could encapsulate all the knowledge I've gained through the years from life experience and careful study into a single pearl of wisdom for you, it would be this. People are idiots.
More! Johnny!
I was surprised
you
got that one.
Coffee.
Oh no! It's another Enterprise!
You're a greedy son of a bitch!
I love our show, but movies.
That's how you change hearts and minds, kids.
Jesus.
Please.
Oh, God.
I Love Lucy is on tonight.
Strictly pleasure. Actually, I've built up about 3 months of leave, and Dr. Crusher finally insisted that I take some of it. She nearly shoved me out of the airlock.
The accident, the 71 people who died. We were testing the cloaking device.
It was covered up.
The 9 of us who made it back alive were sworn to secrecy.
Oh, shit.
There. Now you look like Starfleet material.
Material.
Yeah.
Oh! You remember that one?
I'm very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of being and immaculous. Short of ants is vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general.
But I mean, were any Orions even doing science?
They weren't all pirates, you know. Somebody had to make the starships.
outside can be challenging.
Dangerous.
Now, start at the beginning.
Has it ever occurred to you that a tachyon beam directed at a Class B itinerant pulsar could produce enough gravimetric energy to create an artificial singularity?
I can't say it has.
It occurred to me.
Surprise.
Scotty, beam me up. Scotty!
Aye, sir.
Beam us up. Scotty, beam us up fast.
Julian, you're doing up this early.
You've been working for 16 hours straight. I thought you could do with some sandwiches.
It's very thoughtful.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Truer words were never spoken.
Not exactly a vacation planet, huh?
Mm-mm. Unless you like ammonia tornadoes.
That's my favorite one.
Do you mind telling me what's going on here, crewman?
We're making dinner.
I see.
So there you go.
You're a greedy son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's a regular clip
so
of ours.
Are those all the wherever the hell have
those
I heard?
Those are all 26 that we've done so far.
God,
I don't remember you doing You're a Greedy Son of a
what
Bitch.
What about that yeah. one with like...
There was another one I don't remember you doing either.
The Greedy Son of a Bitch was... It made sense at the time, but it was also funny because that is one of the regular clips.
I can't believe we've done that many.
Oh, yeah.
That went on for a while.
Surprised me too. Well, we started in like December or something. I know that was, that's a long clip. So I did make a shortened version, just a brief version. So if people want to hear it again, and maybe it's, you know how people listen to podcasts at multi-speed or whatever. So here's
multi-pass.
Here's a 30-second version of what you just heard.
Oh, God.
When will then be now?
Where the hell have I heard that before?
I didn't like that one.
I like that one better.
Yeah, it was just fun.
You would.
All right, now
you have weird shit.
Example. Now we're gonna play the clip. We're gonna play it twice. This week's brand new clip.
Twice as nice.
And you write us in by Thursday or Friday-ish and submit your guess. And we welcome as many guesses as we can get. And this clip was suggested by a longtime listener and
first-time caller.
No, actually, he's been a caller many times. Grayson from the Prime Detective podcast, which is really a fantastic short-form Star Trek podcast. Star Trek and true crime, where they intersect. It's amazing. Check it out.
Say it's amazeballs?
I absolutely would say it's amazeballs.
If you said that kind of thing.
And any similar type of phrase. So here is the clip that you have to guess for next week. Okay. Now, apologies, because I did the same stupid thing I usually do, which is I click too many times. But I'll play it one more time. I think it was relatively
then it'll
clear.
Be just fine.
Here you go.
Asshole.
So, let us know. Man. Do you know which character said that? And in which piece of Star Trek content
beats.
Did they say that? And provide any other details you can if you like. And we look forward to hearing from you. Again, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com or DMS at itsgotstartrek on all the social media.
Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
Now we can return.
Do it.
Return to this conversation. And I'm trying to remember, because we've talked about a lot of kind of the big things. One question I had was, which do you think is better? What do you think is better? Open the door, get on the floor, everybody stun the dinosaur, or open the door, get on the floor, everybody punch the dinosaur.
And led to the extinction of the dinosaurs.
The thing is, I get why punch is maybe funnier, but I think that the stun works better lyrically. What do you think?
I think
open the door, get on the floor, everybody stun the dinosaur.
I like
open the door, get on the floor. Lyric. Everybody punch the dinosaur. It's the CH that's a little, the NCH.
Yeah.
I got nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying, I don't know. I can go either way.
It's a better scene, you know, for comedy.
Yeah, the punch. What did you think of the punch? Dan, did you like it?
I don't know.
You don't know if you liked it?
I mean, I'd never thought about it before.
Dinosaur popped up in her face, and maybe she thought it was a Gorn, and she popped it.
I thought that, at first I thought that was ridiculous, but then I was like, oh yeah, she's like genetically enhanced.
Yeah.
So both her and Una are like genetically enhanced, but in different ways.
Yeah. I appreciated it both for, you know, it's a kind of a fun, surprising thing. It sort of fits with Lon's personality, but it wasn't all for naught. It did lead directly into some character development, which is her increasing concerns about her genetics, her naughty genes.
Naughty.
Oh, we are way she's past that.
This has been a series-long thing, but
genes.
Recently she's had more concerns, and clearly that's going to be a thing that happens. Good point, Jesse. seems to be, I think it's going to be some sort of at least story they come back to a few times.
Just you, Stun?
So again,
Letty.
I like when they have the fun goofy thing, but it's not like they still use it as a hook to do something else. That's nice storytelling. Mm-hmm. They didn't always accomplish that in this particular episode, but there were a bunch of moments like that, and I thought that was the one that stood out to me the most, where it's like fun, silly, crowd pleasing, but ooh, segues right into it resulted in her having a concern or getting some character development about that.
Come on. Lon and Una and I are going to talk about dinosaurs.
So this actually made me think of the alternative factor.
With Lazarus.
Because of their usage of the word warp. Because at one point, Scotty says, look, our problem is we lost all our iridium. Without it, we can't ignite the warp. We can't ignite the warp engines. We're basically stuck here. Yeah. So he's using warp as we're used to them using warp as warp engines. And then Una says in response, all we've been able to determine is the stellar storm somehow pulled the ship into a warp field. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was talking about in alternative factors. Yeah. They were talking about warp drives or whatever, but then Spock referred to the rip in time, space. They didn't call it space time back then.
Yeah. They're ripping in the Terran.
Ripping in the Terran. He referred to it as a warp in space. Mm-hmm. And I was being like, well, which is it? Is a warp the thing that makes you go fast, or is a warp a big tear in the universe? And so they did the same thing here. Yeah. So they probably didn't do that on purpose, but it was interesting that
It is an interesting point, and it did stand out to me a little bit, and thanks for making that comparison. New listeners, don't worry, Jesse just sneezes sometimes.
Yeah, it's his thing.
Sometimes we edit it out.
I'm doing my best.
Sometimes we don't, because it's kind of charming and funny. But yeah, it's kind of like, how much credit do you want to give the writers? Because some of the stuff they do seems to be like, no, we're doing like TOS style, where we're not stressing about some of the specifics and we're kind of having fun playing around.
And Lower Decks had some deep cuts in there sometimes. So so sometimes they are like, but that seems like kind of subtle enough that it seems like if they were going to pull a reference, they would make it like it would kind of hit you over the head more. This is a little too esoteric, I think.
Yeah.
This is a long one. Yeah. Jesse's been going on for a good minute now. Yeah,
don't worry. It's all good. We'll do a 30-second
version. I think I'm getting some.
He's on.
You're getting some. So, like, it's when they land on the planets and stuff, and, like, this episode is no exception. Like, it's cool, all the backgrounds and stuff of the planet, and, like, the 65 million years ago stuff.
Planet Earth.
But somehow it still feels like almost cramped feeling.
It's because they're using they're overusing what do they call it? That, you know, like Mandalorian started.
Yeah,
with that,
right.
The
zone or the cylinder or the arena, the environment.
It's funny because we're like circling the actual term, and we'll remember it like after we're done recording.
But what I'm saying is like, obviously they're using something,
they're
but
leaning
like
into that. Yeah.
But like, It's kind of interesting when you compare it with TOS because it feels like the room is bigger in TOS, but the background is so blatantly bland and undetailed. Yeah. Like the sky, they don't even make the sky look like a sky in TOS. It's just this one's blue, this one's pink, this is purple.
To be fair, though, to be fair, I agree with you, Dan. Although, to be fair to TOS, frequently that's true what you say, but just as frequently, they would have amazing backdrop artists who would, because you're right, they were on a soundstage just like a fucking airplane hangar, and they're putting all the styrofoam rocks and funny lights, but it was big.
Yeah.
Whereas the I almost had it in my brain, the name of this stupid thing.
The Zerbert.
Yeah, the Zerbert. It is much smaller, and I enjoy that technology, but I think it's Star Trek in particular, but a lot of shows have been overusing it. And The Mandalorian even didn't, like, they did some outside stuff too. And in Star Trek, you know what you ought to do? Go to the Vasquez Rocks, and then you do the special effects in the background, you know? Or you add some plants and stuff. But then you got that reality, you got that outside, because you can always, this is true of every Star Trek, you can always tell when they're on a soundstage versus outside.
The Mandalorian, I feel like they did a little bit of a better job of, maybe they had a bigger, by the way, do you want me to tell you what it's called?
What?
The Volume.
The Volume!
The Volume. Yeah.
As in the thing you might or may not want to pump up.
Pump.
Oh, no, that's the Jam. No, they have the Volume. Pump up the Volume. Yeah, you can pump up the Volume.
You can either the Jam or the Volume.
That's the best part.
It's the best part.
So I wonder if the Mandalorian used a bigger volume or something, because I didn't get that sort of claustrophobic feeling in the Mandalorian as much as I did. Yeah. Maybe it's, and it also could just be the Mandalorian didn't have as much intricate shit going on in the background, because you're often on like a desert planet or something, whereas this had a bunch of shit going on.
If you ask me, because I think if anything, the Mandalorian volume initially anyway was probably smaller, but
didn't have as much shit going on.
They didn't film the entire show there, first of all.
And there wasn't as much detail in the stuff going on.
And exactly as you say, Dan, it's like an alien planet, but it's a desert alien planet that just looks like fucking North Africa, right? It looks like outside of Morocco. It's something we're familiar with. It doesn't have that uncanny valley. And so our brain is happy to fill in that it's, that desert goes on for a long time or whatever. But even The Mandalorian, like third season, you know, it started getting a little like, now it's feeling kind of cramped. And you can tell by like when they're doing fights and stuff, they're not like sprawling all around. It's always like, we're just gonna, we have like a 5-foot circle that we're gonna fight in. Certainly,
is that weird?
But
how is that possible?
On the other hand, it was fun. It was cool to see some of the visuals. I don't know if the whole season is like that. I could see getting aggravated if there's like zero. Mm-hmm. But they're also not filming in LA. You know, they're filming in Toronto, so it's a slightly different situation. You get what you get, I guess. But I
need to think about it.
You know, you think
really. Think.
You think back to those pretty. I mean, they're not high budget episodes when they would go film in the Griffith Park or whatever outside of LA, filming Darmok or whatever. Like all these famous episodes, and is you really appreciate when they're out and about.
Or like
and there's
the Academy,
actual grass.
Where they use like some kind of like water treatment plant.
Yeah, cool stuff like that. And yeah, they had a lot of outdoor stuff too. Academy looked great in part because they didn't rely nearly as much on that volume action.
The question about the Prime Directive. Mm. So Spock's worried about the Prime Directive, which they technically don't have yet. He's calling it the Prime Directive, and that's not what they call it at this point. They're supposed to, at this point, they call it like, I always forget what they call it.
Yeah, I mean, they've been calling it kind of the Prime Directive.
Yeah, but I mean, in TOS, they called it, I keep forgetting.
They call it Order Number One.
Yeah, right.
General Order Number One. However, they also do call it the Prime Directive in the TOS eventually.
It means the same thing.
You know, it's like, I don't worry too much about
that.
If they enforce more consistency on a term or something. Plus, I love that, I always love that joke with Captain Archer on Enterprise, where he's like, maybe we need some sort of
a directive,
like a primary, like a really important directive.
So after they get grabbed by those electro tendrils from that spaceship, Spock goes, "Be careful what you say, Captain. If they are not familiar with Starfleet, it is possible that they are pre-warp. They may be seizing our ship to learn about our technology, which is strictly against our Prime Directive." Mm. Can you violate the Prime Directive if someone is like fucking taking your shit from you? Is that a violation of the Prime Directive?
Honestly, or if you were like forcibly
if you're just wondering,
sent back in time.
If you're wandering through space and someone like captures your shit, have you just violated the Prime Directive through no fault of your own? I guess it could be argued whether or not it's your fault, but it's not. It's like kind of like it's just one of those things that happens.
The expectation would be you would, if possible, if it was, if you were able to prevent any contamination by blowing up your ship or killing yourselves, like, you would be expected to do that. That's the Prime Directive says, is that
you
important?
You should blow yourself up.
But that doesn't mean, you're right, Dan. It doesn't mean like maybe somebody comes out of nowhere and you don't have time, right? Well, in this scenario, they didn't even have an opportunity to even think about that.
Lon didn't give a fuck about no Prime Directive. She was just mowing trees down left and right. But
and that goes a little to that, that character development.
Another question. There was an exchange that I wasn't quite clear on. It was between Pike and it was
Commander Kessel.
It was between
Captain Pike
and Commander Cassell.
Cassell, right? Saffron Burroughs.
Yeah.
Folks will most likely remember her most as Dr. Susan McAllister in the 1999 classic Deep Blue Sea.
Yes. Okay.
As she's been in a bunch of other like
sick
more
of these motherfucking
movies.
Snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah, that, exactly.
So Pike says, he goes, Commander, he's talking to Cassell, and this is when she's on her ship and he's on his, and they haven't gone face to face yet, and they're just talking the first time. He goes, Commander, we do have weapons, and Starfleet has more, a lot more. Do you really want us to turn on you just to prove a point? Why don't you come aboard? I can show you myself, and we can discuss ways that the Federation can help you. And then she goes, I don't think this will be useful, but if you have weapons to show us personally, I'll come on board to see them. Then he goes, that's not exactly what I said. Now, isn't that what he said?
No, he did not. He said, he threatened her by saying, we have crazy awesome weapons and we're going to shoot you with them. And then he said, why don't you come on board and we can talk about it? And she misinterpreted that because he was like, and how we can help you, because the joke is
that she's assuming that he wants to show her the weapons and he just wants to talk.
Yeah, exactly. She's misinterpreted it as him saying, oh, come on board and I'll show you my awesome weapons and maybe we can give them to you to help. And that's because of her, like every decision she makes obviously is because in the framework of being warlike. And
well, like the science, she's like, this science, is this to help you understand the weakness of your enemies?
I did like all the messaging about the value of EDIC and diversity and stuff. And I thought it was well stated and it was even convincing to her, except in the context of, we don't get to have that luxury because we're dealing with monstrous bug people.
So, at some point she was able to look at the computer, their computer, and figure out that they were from the future and that her planet dies. Now, when was she alone long enough to be able to do that?
Yeah.
And how was she able to like access this foreign machine that she never interacted with before? Yeah. She was able to suddenly figure out that they traveled through time and that her planet was going to blow up.
That didn't bother me because they can walk through walls and they can do whatever they want. And they clearly were technological.
But she didn't even understand the concept of a union, because he was trying to explain the Federation of Planets, which all the Federation of Planets is a union of things.
But why would she not understand just how to do a Google search on a database or a DuckDuckGo search or whatever they use?
Because first of all, it's a different language. It's like a different machine. It's foreign technology. Yeah. So you need at least some time to ramp up to understand what it is you're interacting with. As far as I could tell, she wasn't alone long enough to do that. And and she can't even understand what a fucking union is. I don't know. I
get it. Your critique is not invalid. It's just, it also would apply to the huge proportion of Star Trek stories.
Not really. There's not a ton of Star Trek stories where someone is never left alone and suddenly they learn that someone's from the future and their planet died.
I think the plot and the story
is the point.
I don't have enough time to think about it.
I knew it.
I had to guess, my feeling from watching,
why don't you come up with one,
thousands of hours, we'll do it on the next week,
because
episode.
I just think that it's, I just don't see her having time enough to do such a thing.
To
learn a foreign, it's hard to learn foreign systems.
Takes
at least a few minutes.
Kirk, Spock, everybody, they hop on alien ships and they're like, oh, this is like a Breen ship and now we're flying it somehow.
I can't think of a single example where that happened.
I just gave one, when they take over a Breen ship, or when they take over remember when they capture a Dominion ship and they it takes them a little while, but they figure out how to fly it and they're all flying it all goofy. But
flying is different because flying is universal. It's up, down, it's like pitch.
Why
and
would
yaw.
You think flying is universal?
Because it's
yaw
all
control.
But the interface. Why would the interface?
Because it's
be
all pitch and yaw. So all you have to figure out is which goes up and down and left and right. But to learn a foreign language and to navigate their file system to be able to understand what program to go into that somehow introduces you the idea of time travel.
Maybe
and
the
playing,
Martians
you know.
Was better than us.
How was she able to find out information about Mars to begin with? Not worth arguing and more anymore about, I guess. But I'm just saying.
Okay. Any final points?
Honestly, might just be very Vulcan.
Yeah. We got to shut down the podcast, but I think we got all the major points. I did have some quibbles with the choice of flora and fauna that were very anachronistic. But again, similar to Dan's point, it's a valid point, but a nitpick to have the wrong plants and the wrong dinosaurs hanging out together.
And this isn't a criticism. I just thought it was funny. Like Pike turns down the promotion, but there's some kind of like law of conservation of promotions, because he was right. Like, well, I'm going to turn down the promotion. Just give one over to Una instead. Right. It's not even the same
transitive
position.
Right. She gets a promotion to a different rank for some reason.
Yeah. Promotions can't be created or destroyed.
Right.
Yeah.
So can't destroy his promotion. Got to give it to Una.
Yeah. It's a zero sum game. This Starfleet promotion business. All right. Fun episode, flawed episode, but fun start to the season.
I was entertained. I wish they'd dialed it back a little bit, but you know.
Also, I know I hinted at it a little bit before, but you know, I really like Pike.
I like Pike.
Ants and Mouse.
I like Pike.
I like to be like Pike. I want to be like Pike.
He does a great job with Pike.
I like to be like Pike.
But intriguingly, Pike really, and I don't know if this is on purpose, but he's increasingly like shown to be, it's not that he's not a good captain, but he's often indecisive, wobbly. He can kind of be like weirdly passive, or then he's
feels doing, like you're not helping.
Or he's doing this aggressive thing where he's like making everyone else overwork to help him distract himself from his trauma, which is kind of,
that's good.
It's kind of a weird thing to do.
I think he's just getting weirder from all that, like,
okay, not ideal.
From the hairspray? From the Klingon hairspray
The Klingon time crystals.
Yeah.
Have you seen his like IMDb picture of the one where he's got long hair and a big bushy beard? It's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't see it on IMDb though. I saw it in my dreams.
He was in the movie Crossroads with Britney Spears.
He was like the bad guy, wasn't he?
Is he the bad boy?
I think he was the bad guy.
Is he a bad boy dating her or something?
I didn't see the movie. I forget.
Are you going to try and take over the galaxy now?
Oh, that's the one last thing. Were they playing that whole scene? Was that really that scene where they were talking about Lon and her
naughty jeans,
her boots,
her naughty jeans? So I can't tell if it's meant to be funny because it's so dry. Mm-hmm. Because Lon says, "I carry the augmented DNA. I've been through the activated through recessive genes," and then Benga goes, "Are you going to try and take over the galaxy now?"
She's like, "I don't know."
And then like that sounds like a joke, right? But she answers seriously, like you just said, "I don't know." And then Chapel says, "Hey, you may be carrying enhanced warrior genes, but it's not who you really are." And I was like, is that a fucking joke? Like,
she said,
because it's like, you may be a badass warrior, but that's not really you. It's like, that sounds like a joke.
You're right.
But they deliver it so seriously.
In this episode, especially with Mbenga, it's definitely framed to be lighthearted and a joke.
Yeah, Mbenga's like, more lighthearted.
And they're not, it's not that they're dismissing her and not taking her seriously. They're just kind of trying to, you know, make things a little kind of happy and elevated a little bit. Although, again, no spoilers at all, but in the recap of this episode, in the next episode, they only play the part where it's like, do you think you're going to take over the world? And she's like, I don't know. And then they cut it off. So there's no humor in the way they've edited that in the recap for next week. So keep an eye out for that. It was interesting that you asked that question, Dan, because here's totally to be funny, but then when they replay it, it's meant to be all like upsetting and sinister.
Well, I'm sure it had it coming.
All right.
Cool, babe.
They're all like, genocide. They're bug people. Who gives a fuck about bug people?
Right? Not this guy.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. So next week,
egg salad.
Next week we will be discussing episode 2 of season 4 of Strange New Worlds, and that is titled The Griffin Incident.
Oh no!
Dan, I thought Dan might have some sort of like clever little. Oh no! Oh, okay. Peter Griffin. I didn't think of that.
And then another.
See, there you go. That was good.
Excellent.
That was good.
Excellent.
When you were doing Peter singing the Magnum P.I. or that whatever song.
Axel F.
That song, I think you did a good job.
If you listen to the Magnum P.I. song, it is what I sang. I even listened to it at break, and there's a guitar part that goes, and then the orchestra hits and goes, what was confusing?
I keep wanting to be like, tequila!
No, see, you're mocking me, but the fact is that you're confused because I'm playing two different parts.
Dun 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 That part's fantastic.
Listen to the fucking song and you will fucking hear it. Mm-hmm. See, you are laughing. You do this thing where you like,
I'm sorry. Where you like laugh. It's an honest response. You laugh and mock you.
You're trying to like overplay some kind of thing. But like, listen to it, dude, because it's fucking, everyone listen to the Magnum P.I. song and tell me how I'm right or wrong.
Everybody listen to the Magnum P.I. song and write in and let us know.
Because I'm on point and you're acting like I'm a fucking, you're gaslighting me.
This is not
that is gaslighting me because I'm doing something right and you're telling me that I'm totally off and you're fucking with me.
No, I'm not trying to make you feel insane so I can steal your aunt's, your grandmother's like riches.
Well, you're getting too specific about it.
All right. Talk to us next week. We'll be back. In the meantime, you know, all the social medias, YouTubes and all that. Write a review. Dan will write a haiku. Just let it write a review and let us know.
Or fuck you.
Oh, yeah. Or Jesse will give you a fuck you if you prefer. Just note that in the review.
Did it eat her?
And we look forward to you hanging on with us for the next, 9 weeks, I guess, conclude the, review the fourth season, discuss, whatever this is.
Is this the final?
It's a lassie.
No,
it's not a laddie.
There's another one.
There's a six episode.
It's a lassie.
A six episode fifth season, has already been filmed. So, so they're all done.
It's a lassie.
So, with that, we will say goodbye.
Woo!
This discussion is over.
You're all dismissed.
Think you punched a dinosaur?
In communication.
Welcome back, Captain. I can take your saddle if needed.
Well, I prefer to carry my own gear, but thanks, Spock.
But you knew that already.
I felt it important to be here as soon as you returned to the ship.
You wanted to see me in my outfit, didn't you?
Perhaps.
Follow me to my quarters, Mr. Spock. These boots are hard to take off of.